This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast, fueled by Guinness, powered by celery. Thank God for that. I am Stamford Chidge, and I am joined by the wonderful Jonathan Kidd.
It's a surprise, isn't it, Chidge, to have me on the show? I mean, let's be honest.
I'm bewildered. I never thought I'd see you again after last Friday.
No, indeed, because I reached a nadir, I think they call it. I reached a high low.
Of what?
Yeah, high low of well, because I got it right, didn't I? 2-2, and it's awful that I got it right. The very fact that I was in a mood to be able to get it right was just too much for me. You know, I thought it was, you know, but also I'm now in a complete slough. I'm in a slough of despond now.
And a slough of despot.
Indeed, a slough. Yes, a maiden.
Come
head.
Glorious bombs and drop on slough.
Yes, indeed.
Bit of Betcheman. We have culture on this show.
Hey. Can you do the one about the train and the postie? You
know, no, but I know the poem, and it's a thing of delight.
Thing of beauty. What a thing of beauty. Him and Larkin, what lovely poets they were.
One of my favourite poems in the world is Philip Larkin, which starts with, "They fuck you up, your parents. They do not mean to, but they do." Yes, I use that in my work quite a lot.
Do you?
I do. Anyway, we've got a third member of the Troika.
I think we can see him. I've got a little tune for him.
Oh, hello.
Hi-ho, Silver! Woo!
That makes you my tonto.
Oh, I love you. Yes, your tonto should have been your tonto. He is the witty birth twin of Cialini. Hi-ho, Silver! Away!
Brilliant. Calm down, Tonto. No, hi, guys. Oh. How's everyone?
Not now, Tonto.
Not now, Tonto.
Mixing our films. Dan, how lovely to see you again, because we had the pleasure of your company for most of Saturday, didn't we?
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's been a while, so looking forward to talking about another disaster.
Yeah, fuck the football, mate.
Let's not mince words, mate. Yeah. Let's tell the truth. Yes, yeah. Awful pile of.
Yeah. I know. Don't worry. We got plenty of time for that garbage. Yeah. Anyway, listen, as ever, do not forget you can listen to the show live.
Live,
JK, every Monday and Friday at around 7:30. Unless we do it on a Tuesday, like we are tonight, because, of course, it was a bank holiday yesterday, I know. Every week I say this, something has changed. It's so infuriating. Anyway, usually live He missed that one. Oh, well done, well done. I thought I'd catch you out there.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, every Monday and Friday at 7:30. And you can go to Mixlr, which is chelsea-fancast.mixlr.com, where you can join in the chat by posting on the live chat page.
But
thank you, well done. We've branched out, as you can probably see. You could see if there's something weird going on with the chroma key thing that we have, because you can't see maybe you can see my hands if I do this. See, we're live. I'm waving to you live.
Anyway,
yeah, that's right. YouTube, of course, and the Chelsea Fancast Facebook page on, guess what, Facebook. So that gets a simulcast, like they used to say in old money. So you can watch us as well as listen to us. And of course, you can comment on the YouTube and the Facebook channels as well. So there we go. Now, you can follow us on all of the social media channels at Chelsea Fancast. Of course, listen and subscribe on Acast, because we download this in the old school way that we always have done as a podcast right after the show. And you can get that on Acast, Spotify, Apple, and all good podcast platforms, and all the rubbish ones too. And of course, make sure you leave us a bewilderingly fantastic 5-star review, as if you wouldn't. Now, the other thing you can do, of course, is you can become one of the many Chelsea Fancast Patreons, people who like to patronize us, and I love you all for doing that. It all helps. Now, we don't really do it properly. We don't have like premium content on there or tiered levels of support. Just bung us what you fancy every month, really. It's very simple. Or do you know what? Don't bung us anything at all. Equally happy, love you all either way. But if you do want to get involved and support us, it is lovely, it is welcome. It's also a good way to get in touch, really, because I do tend to look at it just to answer people's messages and things. Reminding me, actually, Jeff Lowry, I owe you a reply. I will do it after this show. Anyway, patreon.com/Chelsea Fancast. And if you do sign up, you will be entitled to a Kerry Dixon banner, a mini one, a replica of the one that you'll find in the Matthew Harding, upper lower, depending on your perspective. And of course, you can join our Discord group. Now, the Discord group is quite a lot of fun, really, because it's a bit like, the Mixlr chat room or the YouTube, Facebook chat rooms, 24/7. There's people chatting to each other all times of the day, because we've got a lot of American and other overseas supporters in there. On a match day, it's particularly fun because you'll be privy to the now legendary Paul Crowderville meltdowns, where he rants for England. He makes Jonathan look somnambulant. Crowderville gets riled, and it's just a sight to behold, actually. So there you go. He's a lovely bloke, Paul. I never let a word be said against him, but he does like a rant.
We've had him on the show. He was excellent.
Anytime. No, next time he's out. Well, actually, do you know what? Fuck it. We should get him on the show anyway, because I mean, yeah. What time is it in LA? It's about 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, maybe we'll get Crowderville back. We love Paul. Anyway, enough already. Right, there's a couple of other things I wanted to kind of bore you stupid with before getting into. I'm just trying to avoid the football. Have you figured that out yet? Yeah, you probably have. Okay, this is a thing of beauty here. Not the idiot on the left holding the pint of Guinness, because that would be yours truly, unless it's Pochettino. No, it's definitely me.
There's Dan in the background.
There is Dan in the background. Well observed, JK. Yes. Anyway, the main thing about this is not the pillock holding the pint of Guinness, which would be me, or the lovely looking chap in the background, which would be Dan. It is the fact that we have these fantastic T-shirts, which say, got a picture of Conor Gallagher on them saying, if they sell Conor, we riot. Now, the beautiful thing about these T-shirts is that they are boiling the piss out of a lot of the Muppets and the fuckwits on social media. So if ever there was a reason to buy one, I would say it would be that. Are we serious about rioting here? Well, not really. It's just I saw the phrase on Twitter, actually, and I thought, that's funny. Why don't we make a T-shirt out of that? So it's a bit of Chelsea Fancast humour, really. And I mean, yeah, it shows that you support Conor as well, I suppose, and it supports us too. So there you go. So if you want to buy a T-shirt, we do all sizes. Men's and women's are available. You can pay via PayPal. Use the friends and family option, though, if you do. Otherwise, we get stung with all sorts of charges. Prices are £25, including postage and package in the UK, £28 in Europe, £30 in North America. This is all including postage and packaging. For elsewhere, rest of the world, do email us and we'll figure it out and let you know. Now, we also do these fantastic mugs. Do you want to have a look at the mugs? There we go. Beautiful mugs. You can have a complete white one or one with blue inside. So there you go. So you can either have a T-shirt or a Connor mug or both. Who knows? Now, the mugs, I think, are 15 quid, 18 quid and 20 quid. UK, Europe, North America, including postage and packaging. The best thing to do, really, though, is to check out... we've got a merch page on the Chelsea Fancast website now, which I think is chelseafancast.com/category/merchandise. So there you go. And it'll tell you, you know, how to order it. But basically, if you send an order and PayPal to thechelseaspecial@gmail.com, tell us what you want, put your address down as well. We'll get one out to you because it'd be lovely to get these going. We've got more T-shirts planned as well, so keep your eyes skinned for those. Right, after all that pluggery, well, actually, I'm sorry, I've avoided it for as long as I can, but we will be talking about the football after this.
Oh, do we have to?
Yes, we do. Sorry. Well, let's remove that, shall we? Now, the more observant amongst you will notice my obvious Captain Mannering mistake, which is that was one of them, forgetting to turn my mobile phone off. Schoolboy error. We were going to have a yellow card, red card thing for this, weren't we, JK? I'm going to leave it to you from now on. You need to produce a yellow card and a red card.
You got two reds there, Chich, didn't you, though?
No, that's a yellow card. Mind you, two reds and as a sending off, so maybe. Anyway, yes, the more observant amongst you was actually, do you know what? I shall tell you. Do you know who I got a text message from, JK?
The Queen. Oh, no, she's dead.
She's dead. That would have been difficult. Yeah. It was from Paul Crowder.
Very man. Yeah.
Exactly. He says, thanks for the delightful words, sir. Kiss, 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 kiss. So there you go.
Okay, when can he come on the show?
Well, I'll get his people to talk to our people and we'll sort it out. Right. He said, I'd love to come on any time. Oh, there we go. What a great time to have him on. We'd love to come on any time. Got two films coming out too. May 17th. Hang on. I'm going to just actually open the phone and find out. There we go. Because there's more to this message. Dad, if you're going to make background noise, you better mute yourself because you've got those earbuds in. Every chew is amplified by 1,000,000%, but not anymore because you've muted yourself like a legend that you are. Right. He said, all right. Well, yeah. IMAX as well. Yeah, I know about one of them, Blue Angel. Yeah, he's definitely, he's carrying on. I'm just going to say Blue Angels. There you go.
It's about Emma Hayes, is it?
It should be, shouldn't it? No, it's not.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll get him on and we can have a good chat about his films as well because I love talking to Paul about his films. Anyway, what I'm still trying to put off talking about the football, as you've probably figured out. The title of the show tonight is what I forgot to actually say earlier on. It is Indefensibly Inept, Chelsea Fancast 1123. You could say that about us, actually, Indefensibly Inept, and you would probably be right. But no, I mean the performance on Saturday. I just thought... that was the best two words in the English language to sum them up. Let's talk about the inept first, which was the poor finishing and the failing to break down 10 men. Yes, 10 men for 55 minutes. JK, I said to Sasha during the match, I said, this is arguably one of the most inept and stupid Chelsea football teams I have ever seen in my life.
It's reached that stage now, hasn't it, Chidge, where... we're finding it very hard to be forgiving and looking at them and thinking, yes, there is progress to be made. We're now going, what a complete pile of shit that was. I just sit there in despair. I sit there thinking, and particularly after they'd hit the bar, I just thought, God, we're going to lose this now, aren't we? With Badia Shield just failing miserably to look anything like a centre-half. And the ball constantly being driven over the 35 yards up in the air. You just watch them and think, they're awful. This is an awful team. I'd love to go. Yeah, it's, you know, it's in progress. Yeah, we've got to give them a chance because they're all young, and you've got to give them a go. They are shit. Are we going to make any progress in the season at all? They are complete shit. I can't bear it. I cannot bear it. I'm just, it's so depressing. I sit there with my heart, my little heart is just falling out of my trousers. I'm just going, I can't believe this.
I've got a great comment from the lovely Jenny. See if you like that. What do you think about that? Still don't think it was as shit for Southampton at home last season.
That's true, actually. She's right.
Yeah. Hey, it was drier.
That's the point. It's all gone a bit Pete Tong here. They're writing so many comments, I can't keep up with them to remove it. Go away. There we go.
I love that. The state of our club, we're just having to compare shits now. I love that.
Yes, I know. Well, true. I mean, you know, if it wasn't just the you know, inability. I mean, I looked at the stats today, actually, which was a stupid thing. Second half, we had 6 shots on target. But, I mean, I know I hate XG, but put it this way. We statistically were less likely to score by half the amount of goals that Burnley were expected to score in the second half. Well, I mean, they did score 2, so I suppose that's fair enough. Dan, if the finishing and failure to break 10 men down for 55 minutes was inept, I thought the defending was, as the title of the show indicates, indefensible. Piss poor defending. Yeah. Not defending the first goal. Failing to defend another set piece goal, and they should have been a third win goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first goal was just a worldie. He just caught that so sweetly. I can't
remember. Closed down. No. Nobody closed him down.
Well, that was coming to that point. This team lacks aggression in defence. There's nobody, you know, because before you had Drogba heading the ball out, Jackson doesn't attack the ball, nobody attacks the ball. Every single corner was so passive. Now, whether it was zonal marking or whatever kind of marking we're doing, it's utterly shit. As expected goals, it should be excess, expected shit. But just think, everything about the team is passive. There's no aggression. There's nothing in that defence that makes you think, whoa, he's put his head where it hurts. They wouldn't do it. None of them do it. Just awful defending. I mean, Petrovic should have done better the second goal. Yeah. But a free header, I don't know who lost his mouth for the second goal, but he had a free header and he ran at it, got the power. It was too easy, far too easy for them. Rodriguez, off the bar, had got 3 rebounds, the second ball, no one anywhere near it. I mean, had he not been falling backwards, he might have scored that. But literally, free header, free second ball. Just dreadful defending. I mean, it's the 6th game in a row you've let in 2 goals.
Yeah.
Sums it up. You know, we're on course to be our worst defensive season for 30 years, I read somewhere.
I think that might be, you know, ultimately that might be one of the takeaways from this season. I mean, it just beggars belief. I mean, you know, to draw and frankly nearly lose to a team who are 19th, who were playing with 10 men for 55 minutes. I mean, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, I was third championship team we played. And, you know, Leeds, we struggled. Leicester, we struggled. And Burnley, to all intents and purposes, is going to be a championship team. We struggled. 2 against Leicester, 2 against Leeds, 2 against Burnley. Inexcusable. Inexcusable. Yeah. But listen, mitigating circumstances, we haven't had a total back 4 all season. We haven't had the same centre back pairing, full backs. It's been a bit of a mess. We haven't had a chance to build relationships with the defenders. But even so, they're so meek and feeble, lacking in any kind of defensive nous whatsoever.
But nobody comes on and impresses us, Dan, do they? Nobody comes, you think, bloody hell, he had a good game. Oh, yeah, you know,
the groundsman looked quite good at half time.
Did he? Why did he see it?
The groundsman looked really good. Yeah, his fork actually was great.
He poked a few in, didn't he?
Good fork. Yeah, I'm just saying, I know we're digressing, but thank God for Cole Palmer.
He was forking better than everybody else.
He must have been.
Yeah, I could do a better job than some of these, you know. I know if you look, you know, we look at it, we haven't lost in 90 minutes since January, so there are, if that's a, you know, a very small shoot of positivity, but generally speaking, this team is utterly unlikable, utterly dreadful, and utterly shit with one or two exceptions.
You know what? Well, that's actually, do you know what, Dan? You took the words out of my mouth. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching the game with Sasha, although my nephew, should anybody be asking, who's this Sasha Blake? But I think he might think that I hate him. Because I mean, of the 6 matches I've taken him to, 3 have been against Burnley, although admittedly the other 2 we wallop them. But we're on a bad run at the moment. That's a 2-2 draw. We lost in the Carabao Cup. What did I take? We lost against West Ham. But anyway,
West Ham, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, look, I said to him, we were having a lovely chat, and he knows his football, Sash. I have to say, I'll give him that. I mean, I just kind of turned around to him. I said, do you know what, mate? I said, you know, I think some of our players are just simply not good enough and never will be. I mean, it's basic stuff. I mean, they just don't do basic things. And I'm going to name the few that sprung to mind.
Name and shame.
Well, Dizarzi, Badiashile, Cucurella, Enzo, Moises, Mudrick, Gallagher, Jackson. Even Gallagher had a poor game, I thought.
Terrible game.
Saturday. You know, but it's basic stuff. They either don't have the intelligence to do or the skill level to do. And I tell you, it's a concern, Dan.
Complete concern. Because essentially, you've bought the Monaco centre-back partnership, and Monaco are sixth or seventh in the French leagues. They're not exactly signing inspiring players. I mean, I don't think they're particularly good. I mean, they're not bad. They're not Chelsea standards. But then, conversely, Chelsea standards now are mid-table mediocrity. We are where we are because we've got a shit squad, a shit recruitment for years. And it's and that's the best. I think Enzo, he picked up a lot. He got the ball a lot. He was looking for passes, but there was nobody in any space. He's trying to hit like long diagonals, but there's nobody there. Apart from Malagusto, who's the other shining light of the season.
We'll talk about them. I'm going to talk. I mean, honestly, this first part is going to be, I warn you now, people, if you want to go and make a very long cup of coffee, this first part is going to be miserable, moany, and very annoying. No, JK, come back. Come back. Not you.
As I said to you in the pub, if Chelsea were where we've been in recent years, up at the top challenging, Badiashile, Dizarzi, Conor Gallagher, nowhere near this team. Gallagher had been sold 2 years ago. I'm going to get shot down for this. But
No. I mean, look, Dan, you're speaking your honest opinion. And I mean, I want to get onto the midfield in a minute, actually, because I've done a big thing on it. And as I just to warn people, yes, this is going to be, you know, quite a miserable first part. There will be some positives to draw in the second part, and that will indeed include Palmer and Gusto. But Neil Barnett, our old mate Neil Spy, who we know very well, lovely bloke, he was in the presser, it seems, afterwards, and he asked, this is brilliant, he asked Pochettino this question. He says, it seems that the most important part of a player's career is between the ages of 21 and 24, where they either develop into a real Premier League player, or maybe they just miss out. And so many players here are between the ages of 21 and 24. Is it possible that unless the mentality is right, I think he was being diplomatic in using mentality, I think he really meant ability, is right, a number of these players will miss out. Pochettino smiled ruefully whilst he was asking this question, thought about it, and then said, what a question. It's a good question with no answer. And I just felt that this underlines the utter flaw in this Clear Lake strategy and Win Stanley and Stewart strategy, that buying so many players between the age of 21 and 24 who you really have no scooby as to whether they will be any good or not, because it's that vital time. He's right. 21 to 24, that's when you find out if they can do it or not. And it looks to me like we're going to end up with 80% of them not being able to do it, Dan.
Exactly. I mean, Jackson was linked with Bournemouth before we signed him. The previous transfer window, I think Bournemouth came very close to signing him. None of these players, if you look, you always look at the barometer, City, Arsenal, Liverpool, they're the top three teams currently. How many of our squads will get in anywhere near those teams? That's where you look at, I think. Would City come after anybody? Would Arsenal? And that's the levels. None of these players will get anywhere near those teams.
But do you think if the team was sprinkled with experienced, excellent internationals, that they would actually
help?
It would help them to evolve. Because I think there's nobody influencing them at all, because they're all the same age, the chances are some of them will fall by the wayside or do better in other clubs, I'm afraid. They'll get transferred and do much better because they'll be playing in settled sides with very experienced people who can guide them, or they feel more relaxed, they don't feel the pressures on. I think the pressure for some of the players, for Enzo, for example, whether he's bright enough to work, whether he's old enough to realise it, I think if he had more mature Argentinians around him, I think he'd be a better player. You know,
I mean, he's a World Cup winner. I think the problem is all these players. There's no leaders. There's no one around to kind of pull them up by the shoulders. There isn't a John Terry or Frank Lampard. I know we're harking back to 15 years ago.
But Dan, that central point is bang on. I think you know, normally you would integrate say two or three youngsters into a team like this with a lot of older, wiser heads, and they would be carried through the experience. We've now got. The proportions are completely the other way around. The two experienced players, arguably, are Sterling and Silva. And, of course, Silva's not really getting a look in. So it's completely the other way around. So no wonder they're struggling.
And also, we've lost that kind of connection and culture to Chelsea the last 20 years ago, because you'd always have somebody connected to the club at some, like, Czech or whoever it might have been, in some sort of senior role that kind of embodied Aspie. What that great Chelsea team was about. We've lost all that. We haven't got anyone harking back those 3-4 years ago. So that's the team is inexperienced. We've got a coach whose jury's probably all still out on him, whether he's actually the man for the job. Personally, I just don't know, because, you know, there's a whole other avenue. If we get rid of him, who do we get in? It took him a long time to build something at Tottenham. It took him 2 years. He was that close to sack at Tottenham when he joined. But then I guess he stumbled across Harry Kane and the rest is history. Can I just finish very quickly? Also, we've got to realise is, in the last 2 years, this club has been completely and utterly destroyed from different factors, from external factors, governments, the new owners. So we're in a real mess. So I'll argue, you've got to think, well, we are where we are because of so many external factors. On the pitch has been utterly shit, but that's been as a consequence of everything that's happened to us.
I'm going to bring that up because I'm about to talk about Enzo and Caicedo in more depth, actually, and Caroline, the lovely Caroline. Hello, Caroline. Says Enzo played in Los Angeles on Tuesday night with Argentina. I assume he would have returned from there rather than go to Argentina and then fly to the UK. I mean, I said on Friday that I didn't expect him to play because I thought he'd be jet lagged. And I mean, he wasn't too bad, really.
And he mentioned that. He mentioned that in the press conference.
Well, then fucking pick him then. Pick Caicedo. Cassidy or whatever.
He actually said he's not back yet. We'll find out tomorrow.
It's just bonkers. Listen, I wanted to talk about Enzo and Moises because, frankly, I don't think that they're good enough. And that's my opening gambit here.
Not working, is it, Chidge?
I just don't think that they're good enough. And I think it's the root of the problem. Because good midfields, they control games. They basically control the midfield. They win the battle in midfield. Matches are won. In a minute, Dan, I've got a big thing here. I should rephrase that. I've got some serious analysis.
Stay with it, Chidge. I love it. Chidge's thing is big. Let's just go with that.
It's big, people. Believe me.
I had a very different sausage earlier.
Look, you know, we all know. We watch football for a long time. You know, most matches are won or lost in midfield at the end of the day. So if you've got a good, strong midfield, you will control the game, as well, of course, as protecting the defence and setting up the attack, who you then hope to score goals. And I think this is amongst the roots of many of our problems, because I don't see Enzo and Moises, and we'll throw in Gallagher if you like as well, really ever being able to do that. So I thought, so let's think about how good they are. I know. Let's do a comparison of the midfields that we've had down the years. So what I've done, I've looked at who we had in 1991 and 92 when we were last kind of shit, if you like. 98 to 99 when we were actually pretty good, but nothing like we were under Mourinho. 2003-04, so that would have been the last Ranieri season. Then 2008-09, that was Carlo Ancelotti's double season, I think. 2013-14, then recently, 2018-19, so that would have been Tuchel, wouldn't it? 21-22, the last year under Roman. 23-24, what we've got now. And this is what we've got. I should just read them out, so just bear with me. 91-92. I wanted to put this on screen, but I didn't. I fucked up the spreadsheet, so I couldn't put it on screen. And I'm so sorry for boring everybody on this. Right. 91-92, we had Eddie Newton, Vinnie Jones, Gareth Hall, Kevin McAllister, Dennis Wise, Andy Townsend, Graham Stewart, Craig Burley. Any three out of that, better or worse than what we have now? But just to remind you what we have now, Caicedo, Lavia, Ugochukwu, Fernandes, Gallagher, Chukwuemeka, Cassidy, Nkunku, Palmer. because and Cuckoo and Palmer are counted as attacking midfielders according to Transfer Mecht.
Dennis was always marvellous. He was getting better and better. He wasn't, but he's still great. Andy Townsend, whether you loved him or hate him, was actually a very decent player in that period.
Yeah. Philly Gibbons was
McAllister ran around like a blue ass fly. Gareth Hall was, you know, okay. He was a defensive midfield, wasn't he, Hall? Jones was just bizarre purchase. Graham Stewart played very well for Everton subsequently. Bobby Stewart, yeah, was pretty good. And Burley, but despite our hatred for him, Burley put him some
international
good player. Yeah, good performances. Pick
any three out of those better than what we're playing at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
So even in our worst time in recent memory around that period, our midfield was better. Right, 98-99. Eddie Newton, Bjarni Goldbeck, Dennis Wise, Robbie Di Matteo, Jody Morris, Gustavo Poyet. Three out of those.
Dan, do you want to say?
That's much better. That was one of our great teams, that late 90s team. What a midfield. I mean, Poyet, Di Matteo, Wise.
Yeah.
I mean, I take all those three now.
Right. Okay.
Eddie Newton was a fine player. Fine player.
Yeah. That was
before we were even invented. Right. Now we've been invented. 2003-04. Claude Makélélé, Emmanuel Petit, Frank Lampard, Scott Parker, Juan Sebastian Veron, Damien Duff, Jeremy, Joe Cole. Pick any three of those, better or worse.
Fucking hell. Streets ahead. Jesus. God.
Okay, I'm going to carry on playing this game. Wonderful. I like it. We're almost on for a full house. 2008-09, Michael Essien, John Obi Mikel, Monero, Lampard, Ballack, Joe Cole, Deco. Any three from those, I think better by a country mile.
Yeah,
Deco was considered not one of the best, but was, you look back on it, was great.
I mean, that midfield, Lampard, Joe Cole, Deco, hardly get a game. Or Essien even. I mean, it's just mental. Right, yeah. Yeah. Right, 2013-14. You would have thought it's all going a bit Pete Tong by now, wouldn't you? Oh, no. You could call up any three from Nemanja Matic, John Obi Mikel, Oriol Romeo, Michael Essien, Ramirez, Frank Lampard.
Oh, God, wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's better too. Right, okay, let's go to 2018-19. Surely it's going tits up by now. Oh, no, you can call from N'Golo Kante, Jorginho, who I know I criticise, he had his many faults, but there were things he did very well. I would have him in here as a shot at the moment.
Of course, anyway. But that's exactly the. But it's the same as we talked about there. Marcus Alonso, we were always very critical, he can't defend. You'd have him in this team.
Yeah.
He, in a shot because of his ability to score and ability to get into the penalty area with a shot. Jesus, there's no comparison.
Ready? Hang on, I'm finished. Ready? Kante, Jorginho. Kante, Jorginho, Bakayoko, Kovacic, Barkley, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Cesc Fabregas. And we had some younger players or loan players, Ampadu, Drinkwater, Moses. I just put them in for good measure. But, I mean, again, Fabregas, Kovacic, Kante, Jorginho, way better than what we've got right now. 21-22. I mean, I know people say, well, this is unfair. These guys have only just started. But, you know, Caicedo has played not a lot. I agree. Played a season for Brighton. And Fernandes, of course, had a season out in, I think it was Sporting Lisbon. So, yes, I know they're young. But I'm just telling you where we've been and where we are now. 21-22, last year of Roman's tenure. Jorginho, Kante, Kovacic, Saul Niguez. Oh, how we remember him. Loftus-Cheek, Mason Mount, Kai Havertz. Again, arguably, I'd still say better than the midfield we have now. And in reserve, we had a lot of youth. We had Billy Gilmore, Simons, Barkley, Lewis Baker, Drinkwater, Webster Vale. I mean, you know. And now we've got Caicedo, Lavia, Ugochukwu, Fernandes, Gallagher, Chukwuemeka, Cassidy, and Nkunku and Palmer. So, you know, I wonder. I mean, somebody made a very good point. I mean, we're getting so many comments that it's hard to. Here we go. It's Elliot. Elliot always makes good comments. Here we go, Elliot. Is it reasonable to presume that the underperformance of our midfield trio is due, at least in part, to Poch running them into the ground? I'm inclined to believe and agree with some of that, Elliot. But I think he's run Moises and Enzo into the ground because either we've had so many injuries, like Lavia, for example, Ukachugwu, Chukwuemeka. But I think also maybe he looks at them and says he thinks they're the best that we have. But if they're the best that we have, then I'm really worried because right now I don't see them as good enough. I really don't, JK.
No, Chidge. Sorry, I'm just in despair, Chidge.
I'm really sorry to have you despairing at this, but we've only done half an hour.
I know. You look back. The fact that one is immediately mentioning the current players makes me sort of, you know, come all over in prickly heat. You know, I just go, oh, God, save us. Other than Palmer, of course, who is, as we're going to get onto it. And also the bizarre situation of Cassidy, who's brought back to play and has absolutely not played. You think, give him a go, for goodness sake. Like to see what he's like. He did very well for Leicester. Having said that, though, Leicester are pretty shit. So, but yes, Chidge, it just reveals, doesn't it, how poor we have become. But I agree completely. He seems to want to throw Enzo and Casado in. And I think Casado, at least they both make an effort. But unfortunately, making the effort isn't good enough. I agree completely. You'd have thought with both those players, we would be completely dominating a midfield. We would be taking it by the short and curlies and setting everything up. Something I've talked about recently is I still think, though, if we had a decent midfield, another midfield player, a creative midfielder, a top player, and a top striker who would then that would individually score goals that we wouldn't have to, you know, they'd score basically rather than us, whoever we get kicking the ball 25 yards up in the air. We would then possibly be able to, the manager, whoever it is, to concentrate on the defensive qualities that we could then evolve or have, or the onus wouldn't be on scoring as much. So perhaps they wouldn't need to get the ball six times into the penalty area, miss six chances. So perhaps the balance of the team is incorrect. And given if we did have these two exceptional players playing, perhaps we would find better performances from some of the others. But at the moment, the people you've mentioned there are just Lavia. We've got no idea what he's like. The bizarreness of that. Ugochukwu and Chukwuemeka are practically... it's practically the same player, because I've no idea what either of them do. I don't know about anybody else here, but I have no idea what their strengths are, because they seem to flit in and out. They're either one of them is injured or the other one is injured. I've yet to develop any kind of affection or knowledge of either of those players, which I think is bizarre. Enzo, I'm aware of how much he tries. I'm aware of how he cannot shoot other than straight at the goalkeeper. That is his stock shot. He had a shot at the weekend that was well saved. That was deflected. Otherwise, gets into good positions. It goes straight at the goalkeeper nearly every time. And Nkunku, we have once no clue about either. So what a strange team this is. What a strange time to be a Chelsea fan.
A time to be alive.
I think that's a positive, though, isn't it, Jude? That's a hey, what a time to be alive! Yeah, hey.
I said it with a kind of a manic madness.
There was a mad irony behind it. This is now what a time to be a Chelsea fan. Yeah,
we live in interesting times, as the Chinese say. Dan, what have you been wanting to say something?
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Let's think about this. The team's got no spine. It's got a shit defense, shit midfield, shit attack. If they just had better players around them, would their game just naturally raise? Because they're not bad footballers. I mean, you know.
Well, I don't know. I've seen so many errors, Dan. Basic, simple footballing errors from the majority of the team. I really wonder whether they're actually good players.
I mean, Enzo was a World Cup winner, was one of the best players throughout the tournament. So he's not a mug.
We have to give him a pass. Say,
not pass, but let's not judge him after, you know.
I think Enzo is a good footballer. I just don't think in the midfield at the moment with Chelsea, which might have something to do with Poch, might have something to do with the system, might have the fact that he's overwhelmed by the shit around him, that maybe it's affecting him. I accept that he's a good footballer, but I would pick, you know, all the people that we've just laid out of all those previous years. He doesn't get into any of those midfield.
Yeah. Do you think if these players cost, say, 70 million between them, there'd be less fuss? Because the fact it's £220 million midfield, there's so much more spotlight on them and judgment on them because they cost so much money.
I agree totally. And I tell you another thing, you know, Bowley et al. Could, or Clearlake, as we should say, could have adopted a different strategy.
Isn't it Blueco? Shouldn't we be saying
Blueco? Yeah, you're right. Whatever. They could have adopted a different strategy. They could have said, okay, listen, guys, this is not going to be like it was under Abramovich. You have to accept that that's gone. You know, we are not a billionaire who's got a toy and wants to spend money and doesn't care how much he loses because he just puts his hand in his pocket. We're not going to do that. And anyway, we're not going to do it because we think it's unsustainable from an FFP and PSR basis. So we're going to try and make this club sustainable. We also don't think it's sustainable for an FFP and PSR basis because of the revenue that we don't have, because we have a small stadium to go and spend, you know, 200 million on world-class established players. So what we're going to do is we'll spend a little bit of money on some really well-established players, maybe buy one or two world-class players, and then we will populate the rest of the side with this amazing, academy products that this club has produced, because, you know, we've had this reputation of one of the best academies in world football for years. So we're going to take advantage of that because we don't have to pay them as much in wages. They're homegrown. And of course, you know, all the other things that they're saying would apply, that we can sell them if they're really, really good and we need to. But we think that they, with a good mix of experienced players and world-class players, will come good. And I think if they'd have done that, everybody would have been behind it. The matchday fans would have been behind it. It would have been a bit like what happened with the transfer ban, which, you know, I know a lot of it was ruined by COVID, but it's one of the most fun times supporting this club that we've had in the last 20, 30 years, even though, you know, we weren't winning everything. But we had a lot of these guys coming through. They were bloody good when played with experienced players, a few older, wiser heads, given an opportunity. They were all right, but they were reasonably all right. They had the backing of the supporters, Dan, didn't they? I mean, everybody was behind them. And I think if Clearlake had come in and done that, we'd have had much more sustained backing. Would have been the supporters would have been far more forgiving because it would have been, well, they're young, they're kids, they're ours, we've got to get behind them. Whereas you've come from Brighton, we've spent 115 million quid on you. What the fuck for? You know, it's a very different proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I mean, whoever came in after Abramovich is going to have big shoes to fill regardless of what happened, because, you know,
if they'd have been honest, adopted a different strategy, it could have been very different.
But did they actually talk strategy? Did they actually say X, Y, Z? They've just come and they bought players. I mean, the Potter transfer window, they spunked all that money on those players. They parachuted in, who was it, Mudryk, Fernandez, whoever else in. They've just been throwing a lot of shit and hoping some of it sticks. And the plan is a lot of these players, they'll sell him for profit because you pay £30 million a player, book value in 2 years drops to £15 million, sell him for £25 million, you've got your £10 million profit. A lot of these players are all experiments, aren't they? They're not bought, I think, any particular strategy, because we left ourselves with one striker, two bang average goalkeepers, with all due respect. And, you know, it's a hit and miss. They've come into football not really knowing anything about the football culture, anything about how to run a football club. They're trying to make it like a baseball model, and it just doesn't work. They did too much too quickly. They should have kept people in key positions the first 6, 8, 10 months just for a smoother transition. They could have got better advice. I just think they've gone at it, bullying the China shop from top to bottom, and as a result, it's gone utterly to shit. We've fallen down quicker than Ashford Wet on a Saturday night. It's just ridiculous.
It is, and most troubling, I'm afraid. Listen, you lovely people, we are going to have a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and there are some lovely positive things to talk about, not least of which is the wonderful ice cold Palmer. So yes, I'm going to cheer you up, JK. I think you deserve it. So we will be back in a jiffy.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jinj?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
There we go. Who are we to argue with Jason Cundy? Proper Chelsea indeed. Now, I'll tell you somebody, by the way, I'm Stanford Chidge, I should have said, and I'm joined by the lovely Jonathan Kidd.
Hey, up.
And the equally lovely Dan Hi-Ho Silver.
Good evening.
Lovely to see you, Dan, as always, mate. Yeah. Proper Chelsea. Somebody who is eminently becoming proper Chelsea, I think, is the wonderful Ice Cold Palmer. Who scored one of the filthiest Panenkas I've ever seen, actually. It was an absolutely delight of a penalty. And then he actually added to that with a brilliant goal. Props to Sterling for a nice little flick. Proper goal. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. The other thing about it, actually, he made a... I'll get to the quote later, but let's have a look at this. Look at this. He's now... beaten Eden Hazard for the most goal involvements in a debut season. For goal involvements means goals and assists. He's got 16 goals, and therefore a process of elimination tells me that he's got 16 goals, 5 assists. So Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank got 32. I can't actually read that. I think it's 2001. Diego Costa got 23 in 2019. Is that 19 or 18? I can't read. It's too small for my poor eyes. Fabregas got 21. Cole Palmer's on 21. He will get more. So he's likely to overtake, I would have thought, both Costa and Fabregas. I doubt whether he'll overtake Jimmy. Eden Hazard got 20. So, I mean, dear old Cole Palmer is doing rather well. He's bucking the trend. He's been an absolute outlier in another season of mediocrity and shit. He also said this after the game. I kind of liked this a lot. See what you boys think of this. It's poor. I wish he'd actually said it in this accent, JK. It's poor. Very poor. He didn't. He just said it's poor in a Manc accent. It's poor, really. It can't happen, especially when they go down to 10 men. We got too comfortable. Same story. We kill ourselves every week. It's got to improve from us as players. We need consistency. I kind of like that. I like that. That tells me he's got bollocks and leadership as well, JK. He's a cracker.
He's not laying the blame, is he, on anybody?
He's saying it's bollocks, mate. We need to do better.
Yeah.
But isn't he a cracker? I mean, that statistically is quite phenomenal when you think he's what? Is he 19? Please tell me he's 19. Is he 19?
Just turned 20, I think.
Just turned 20.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, we have unearthed an absolute rough diamond here. We really have.
It was a fluke, us buying him, wasn't it? Wasn't he the third choice?
Yeah.
I think they'd had bids for Gordon and what's his name?
Emil Smith Rowe.
Yeah, and Smith Rowe and the United winger who keeps dyeing his hair blonde. What's his name? Ganacho.
Ganacho.
Yeah.
He looks like, what was that bloke in the Tropic Thunder? What's the, what, you know, the one with the, Never Go Full Retard. You know, Tropic Thunder?
I haven't seen the film.
It's a hilarious parody film. Simple Jack. I think Garnacho looks like Simple Jack from that movie. If you know the movie, you know what I mean.
I have no idea what you're talking talking about Chidge, but I'm sure it's great.
It is great. I mean, there'll be people out here who know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, Palmer's just been absolutely brilliant. I mean, he's the outlier in a season full of shit. I mean, he's nailed on to get the Player of the Year, surely, isn't he, JK?
Yes, any shadow of doubt. The other one was the Palace player, wasn't it? Elise was his name.
Michael Elise.
I mean, you could see what they were trying to do, which was to buy nifty wingers. And the other one, of course, what we bought was Lavia, who's just been, I mean, completely disastrous. Once again, I would like to know what he's like as a player, in the same way I'd like to know what Nkunku's like. I don't care.
I want to talk about how good Palmer is. This is the only bit of the show which is going to be vaguely positive. Don't deny me this.
Okay, I won't deny you that. Can we not talk about Chukwuemeka? No. Okay. No.
No, I want to talk about Palmer because I think he's brilliant.
No. Okay. Yes, completely phenomenal. I agree. But I've been going on about that. I said that. I did it in my fan bite.
No, you did. Great fan bite, by the way.
Thank you. But I really felt it. I really felt it. I find it so much easier to do them if I'm hurting, I'm afraid. Mm. Just because it's the experience of having watched them for over 50 years. You just think, I've gone through all of this wonderful, wonderful experience of watching wonderful players, and we're then having to put up with this. But he, as I said, he'd walk into any side for me, Palmer. He would be, or on the subs bench and come on and take people, you know, apart. His potential is phenomenal. They've got to get players to be around him, who as good as him. I mean, he's like the yardstick. You think, well, hang on, we've got him, but did you realize that he would be as good as that? Surely you've seen other players who could have slotted in who would be at the same level as him. I'm not saying obviously the same player, the same position, but people at the same level. Because he is absolutely streets ahead of everybody. He's a proper player, proper class player. And I despair of everybody else around him. It's just, you think, well, you know, he's going to do something. Well, he scored two goals. Actually, the second goal was great, as you said. And suddenly Sterling does something really good. And then Sterling misses the most obvious, easy header later on. Oh, my goodness me. I've stopped talking about Palmer. I've talked about Sterling being.
Yeah, I knew it wouldn't last, but I enjoyed it while it did.
Yeah, it was good.
We had joy. We had fun.
Seasons at start, absolutely. Terry Jacks, yes, indeed. Yeah,
what was the song? We had joy. We had fun.
We had seasons.
We had Arsenal on the run, but the joy did not last because the bastards ran too fast. There you go. Olden but golden.
Well remembered. But I love him. I love him. Wonderful. But you know, you don't know what is going to evolve the rest of the. Well, if he, as I said, I was worried he'd get. Yeah, I've jinxed it now by saying he's one of the few players not to have been injured. And you think, well, what is it? Why hasn't he been injured then? What is it about his abilities? Is it the Frank Lampard thing that he's so good? Have I jinxed it now?
I don't know. Maybe it is. Dan, there was a bit of chatter going on, people making rumours about the club wanting to sell Reece James, which I think, given the source, is complete bollocks. But, I mean, where we are as a club, for two reasons. One, they clearly are desperate to avoid FFP PSR issues. And B, we're a pile of shit. So if anybody decent does come calling at the moment, these players are going to go, yep, thanks very much. I mean, in the old days when we were winning everything, people would go, fuck off, I'm better off at Chelsea because I'm going to win shit. Now they're going to go, do I wait maybe 3 or 5 years for never, or do I go to a bigger club now? You know, so, you know, you can, it worries me, you know, somebody next year, even in the summer, might say, we'll give you 100 million for Palmer. And I can see this lot going, yeah, all right.
I mean, to be fair, if we don't pull our socks up the next couple of years, maybe 26, 27 could be a very distinct possibility. Yeah. You see City buying back for 100 million. Maybe they've got a buyback clause in the contract. I don't know. But listen, we'll come a point where we'll become a selling club like Arsenal were, you know, when they had to sell a good player every year just to survive. And they accepted fourth to be, you know, acceptable. So we've got to be very careful. You know, the next season arguably is going to be key to the next sort of 5, 6, 7 years of where we go on and off the pitch.
I'd bite your hand off now for fourth.
I know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd bite your hand off to actually have three wins in a row. But I just think someone like Reece James, given that he's not had the full season for 3 years, I can't see anybody paying money for him until he's put in 30, 40 games in a row. As good as he is, is injury prone. He's not had a full season for 3 years, and no one's going to, you know, give us 80 million quid for somebody who's got dodgy hamstrings. But no, Cole Palmer's most stable asset right now. There's nobody else who's going to get anywhere near silly money. I mean, you know, if we had to sell Fernandes or Caicedo, massive loss, wouldn't even break even on our book values for these players now. So really, Palmer's our goose that might lay the golden egg.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's what worries me from a financial point of view. I mean, alternatively, if you are a serious club and you want to challenge for things going down the line, you know, Palmer is the kind of player you build a team around, actually. I mean, I think he's really that good. So watch this space. Be interesting to see what happens. Now, the other player who I think has excelled himself this season and has put his head above the parapet. I mean, this is the interesting thing, actually. I was listening to the radio. I think it might have even been Talk Sport, God forbid. But they were actually talking some sense. They were saying, you know, really what they thought was how Chelsea players, these young players collectively shrink. They can't handle it. They can't handle the pressure at Chelsea. We've said this for years and years and years. We've had certain players coming in who we thought would do really, really well, and they stunk the place out. And the conclusion was they couldn't handle the pressure of playing for a big club. People used to say this of Man United all the time. Well, you know, for 20 years, you could say the same at Chelsea. And there were a number of players that you thought would do well at the club and just didn't. And we seem to have, you know, a bunch of youngsters who I feel quite sorry for, actually, because the pressure on them is even worse than it would be for an established player in a way. And they can't, I think they can't handle it. But the two who can are Palmer, who carries the team in many respects, takes the weight of responsibility on his shoulders as well, seems to love it. Nothing phases him. No pressure's too great. I mean, he takes the penalties. To do a Panenka like that, I mean, he's got balls, mate. Huge, huge, great, big, hairy Manc balls, I tell you. But the other one, who I would put in the same category, is Malo Gusto. I like him. He's got bollocks. He doesn't care. He's not frightened of making a mistake. He'll try things. He'll put his foot in. He's got hunger, desire, and a lot of attitude. And it's a really good attitude, JK, I think. I like him a lot.
I think you've missed the fact that he's really speedy as well, Chidge.
Yep, great pace. Yeah,
really good skill and crosses well. You know, there was a doubt about that, saying, oh, he never crosses well as Reece James, but he's a fine crosser of the ball, but also he gets into very good positions on the byline. He's a very good player, and he is also a very decent defender. So some fantastic tackles he gets in, a very good eye for the ball. They're the two for me that have actually come out of the season.
The two so positives.
Yeah, the big two positives. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I'm afraid Chilwell is stuttering and is nowhere near the player he was. But
I wonder if that's down to the injuries he's picked up.
Yeah.
I do worry about whether he'll get back to that level. Yeah. I mean, we should also mention Conor Gallagher, because I think, you know, Conor Gallagher has upped his game from last year. You know, he has improved. But like we were saying earlier on, you know, if you go back to the teams of yore, he'd struggle to get in. You know, I think he would have been a fundamental part of Frank's transfer ban team. I do think that. But I think, take that season away, I think he would have been a squad player. I don't think he would have been first on the team sheet. And I love Connor to pieces. I mean, fuck me, we've got these T-shirts with him on, you know. But having said that, I think, you know, for consistency, if we were having the player of the season vote today, it would be between Palmer and Connor, because I think Connor's put in a lot of really, really good performances all through the season. But I mean, you know, Connor was here anyway. So Gusto we signed, Palmer we signed. I can't think of anybody who we've signed who's got anywhere near making as many contributions as them or looking half as good, Dan. I mean, it's quite poor, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, no one. Not one single player.
Not one. I mean, not one.
Mudryk is beginning to show a bit of what we paid a lot of money for. A couple of nice bits and pieces done recently. But Carney, again, in flashes, he knows where the goal is, but that's it. Mudryk is, you know, if we're saying Cole Palmer and Malo Gusto are nines and tens, Mudryk is six or seven at best. The rest are all fours.
Yeah.
Could do a lot, lot better if the score report came out end of the season.
Well, I was going to call this show the Curate's Easter Egg, because that would have been funny. And
could
it's Easter.
Put in Christian parts.
Oh, apparently, yes. But anyway.
The show's good in all parts, though.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I just thought that were appropriate, but you know, indefensibly inept. I thought, as I said in the lead up in the intro, you know, I can't think of two better words in the English language that describe the display I witnessed on Saturday. Anyway, the really good news is that the aforementioned Malo Gusto, who is proving to be a really good buy. It looks like he's got a hamstring injury. Have you got any news on that, JK? How worried do we need to be?
Well, he went off with a hamstring problem. So, but the presser is tomorrow, of course. So
I know. Yeah, we're a bit jinxed by that. There'll be no JK presser summary in part three.
I could do it on my own, you know.
Make it all up. It'll be the same answers.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, we don't know. But I have a suspicion, well, if it's a hammy, he could be out for a while, which is disastrous. Talking of which, actually, I caught up with a love. You know, I mentioned Ben Dinnery, Premier Injuries. He's brilliant, Ben. He says, heading into the international break, Chelsea sat second overall for time loss injuries in the Premier League. So there we go. So it validates the point I was making a week ago about, you know, we are the kings of the injury. He also gave I put it in the notes. We're not going to read it out now, but it gives all of the explanations and stuff. So anyway, I hope. All right. Okay. Lovely. We got news, breaking news from Scott Lidgett. Hello, Scott. Lovely to see you. 75% chance of playing via fantasy football site, according to them. So, okay. So maybe he's not as bad. Good, good, good. I hope not. Because I think, as I said, he's been another shining light.
A beacon.
He's been a beacon of positivity, unlike this this podcast. Right, now, okay, we've done the good bits. We're going to go back into the horrible bits now. But also with a bit of hilarity, Frank Leboeuf, who I've had the pleasure of talking to on several occasions, and I loved him as a player for this club. Frank has been even more miserable than us. This is what Frank had to say after the match. On ESPN, I think he says, "I'm fed up. 10 men Burnley." I think actually Frank this season has channeled his inner JK. He's doing his own version of the fan bite for ESPN after every match. "I'm fed up. I'm fed up. 10 men Burnley should have won the game. Chelsea Football Club against Burnley. That's the end of it." No, it all went a bit German.
He became German, yeah.
Maybe he's from Alsace-Lorraine, I don't know.
Ah, yes, of course.
Anyway, I should do that again because I've really ruined it. Sorry, Frank. "I'm fed up. 10 men Burnley should have won the game. Chelsea Football Club against Burnley. That's the end of it. I want to congratulate the fans for still being able to go to Stamford Bridge to watch that." Brilliant, Frank. "The Chelsea players have no stamina, nothing in their heart, nothing in their brain. They don't know what to do. It's unprofessional and unfair to the people who love this club. Sorry, but the people on the board have destroyed this club. That's what you have to face. How do you rebuild that? I don't know. It's going to take a long time." Well, there you go. Frank's not happy. And then I came across, I'll do this later. I mean, it's hard not to disagree with Frank. I've got this stat from Opta, which you might like. Chelsea have a 44.3% chance of finishing inside the top eight of the Premier League and stand 20.3% chance of finishing eighth, according to the latest Opta supercomputer, which means they have a roughly 56 and 80% chance of not, if you prefer it that way round.
What sort of the chances of finishing in the bottom four?
I have no fucking idea, mate. And one of my favourite tweets from Blue Tinted Left Back, who many of us know, he uses the word recursive, which I was very impressed with. He says, "It's recursive now. The manager isn't good enough to raise the players. The players aren't good enough to raise the manager. In the middle of it all is a board that will double down on everything it has done wrong. £1 billion, or sorry, I should say, £1 billion. To look like this. Hopeless." Yeah, I totally agree with you, mate. Anyway, look, that aside, it's just quite unbelievable, isn't it? Here's the thing, Dan. Where's Poch in all of this? You know, I called the show indefensibly inept. You know, there are people who would say that that's what Poch has been. I mean, is his position now indefensible?
I mean, I think he'll survive the season. I can't see them making any changes now. But then have we... It depends on what metrics you're going to use. Have we improved? Have we scored more goals? Yes.
I mean, I think we've looked better in areas. I mean, I know we've been miserable tonight, but we have. We have, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, there are shoots of improvement. The fact we haven't lost in 90 minutes since January. I think Wolves, the only game we've lost recently. We've got 14 games unbeaten at home. Now, these are very small margins compared to what we're used to, but there's a balance of where we are, what we're used to. Has he improved any players? I mean, Palmer was a good player. Has he made Palmer better? Gusto? I mean, can you actually categorically say that Pochettino has improved a player? He's improved parts of what we do. But there's still a real lack of kind of any game plan, defensive setup, ability to hold. I mean, like Newcastle, we were hanging on for dear life. Leeds, Leicester, 2-2. So many basic errors we're making. Now, do you blame the manager for not setting the team up properly? Or do you blame the inexperienced players with no lids on the pitch? Because ultimately, Poch can do all he wants pre-game. But if we go on the pitch and miss six chances and let in two stupid goals because we're not aggressive in defence, that's the fault of, you know, whose fault's that? Where do you lay the blame? It's very, very difficult. Yeah, Jose would come in and set a team up. They'd all know their duties and they would execute it superbly. They, you know, that got first title season letting in 15 goals. Superb defence. Everyone knew their job. Everyone knew what they were doing. But then we had stability. You know, that whole season, you look at all the players that played, pretty much most of the players were playing 30-plus league games. We had stability. We didn't have injuries. This team's had no stability all season. Virtually changed every single match. We've had two goalkeepers who aren't, in my opinion, particularly good enough. Key players injured. We go into the season in Kunku, our great hope, and he's barely kicked the ball for us. So many mitigating circumstances. And it's a shit show. Where's the blame lie? The board for bringing in 150,000 players all under the age of 17 who haven't kicked a ball. I mean, it's a damn sight better than Potter, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be hard. I mean, one thing I would say, I mean, I would agree with Jake, with Dan on a lot of that, JK. I mean, the injury is definitely a mitigation. The assembly of the squad, definitely a mitigation. The fact that they're young and experienced, it takes time. And I thought he explained it quite well about how he has to deal with some of these players, and some need more time than others, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of interesting things in all of that. And I do feel for him on that. But then again, do you know what really pissed me off about Saturday, JK? It was the fact that, guess what happened after half time? They are down to 10 men. Remember this. They came out at us like their lives depended on it. And it's the same pattern we've seen so many games this season. Half-time.
Brentford, yeah. Exactly the same.
At half-time. And we said it on the show, didn't we? We wondered if opposition managers just know this. They know, for some reason, certainly if they're up, the Chelsea players come out after half-time and they've switched off. Palmer almost admitted it in that statement he made, but they switch off. So the opposition manager goes, right, we all know. We've all played football, even at the awful level that I played at. You know, the manager would notice things during a game. He said, right, watch that one. This is what he does. You know, so I wouldn't put it past the opposition manager to go, right, we all know that. In fact, there are people who are yet to be discovered in the Amazon rainforest who know that Chelsea will switch off if they're ahead going into the second half. Go at them. Go right at them within the jugular from the off.
That business of actually not closing people down at the edge of the penalty area has been happening all season. It was exactly the Everton goal away. The Newcastle goal, where the boy who'd never played before passed the ball through and there was no challenge made. It's almost as if they go so far asleep that they just don't. If you look at every other Premier League side, the second anybody gets the ball, I was watching the Man City game at the weekend, Arsenal game. Every player is on for every single shot or pass to block it. They're like limpets. They're just straight on them immediately. We have none of that at all. There is no admission that somebody might be in a position. It's what I think was mentioned earlier on the chat there, and Kenny Swain mentioned it in the Troubadour. You shouldn't be letting teams shoot.
Yeah, definitely.
You just get right on top of them every time.
And we don't appear to have that hunger. We don't appear to have that very basic defensive ability just to close people down, which everybody does in the Premier League to a phenomenally athletic degree. But that's the norm. You accept that. Shots are very rarely got off. It was so difficult for Arsenal to get a shot off against City and vice versa, because they're on top of them all the time, snapping at them. Everybody blocks. If one person blocks, there's somebody else behind to block. So what happens at the beginning of the second half? He's got the freedom of Stamford Bridge, the bloke who scored. And he does a kind of rather balletic volley that hits the outside of his foot and swirls away into the corner. I mean, as you said, Dan, he took it well, but blimey, you know, he had all the time in the world. There was nobody on him at all. It was like it was an after you, Claude, situation. It was Sunday football. Oh, look, there's a bloke on the edge of the penalty area. I don't want to get too close. I might have the ball in my ghoulies, or it might hit my thigh or something. So I won't get too close. It was horrendous, horrendous defensive work by Chelsea. He took it well, the boy, but he should never have been given the opportunity. Never get the opportunity just to come up and volley it like that. It should be somebody on you immediately. So...
Yes, indeed. I mean, I mentioned that earlier, and I stand by that comment. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, Poch can't kick the ball. But I do wonder what on earth he says to them at halftime, Dan, when they come out like that. I mean, you know, it's so obvious that opposition managers just know they're going to switch off and take advantage of it. It drives me up my head in.
Richard, you'd have thought that they would be absolutely receptive of that and therefore make an attempt. What does he say to them? Is that a Poch error? Sorry, Dan, to leap in. I apologize. You know,
not at all. It boils down to this team's mentality. They haven't got one. They haven't got that desire, the hunger, experience. The game management's shit. There's no game management. There's no, you know, Arsenal now doing these tactical fouls against Manchester City, you know, all the time that Pep does so well. There's no tactical fouls. There's no game management. They don't know how to control a game, like, you know, the
Newcastle game,
3-1 up. We give away a goal in the last minute for stupid kick around, makes a stupid challenge, 3-2. Leicester, 2-0, 2-2. Even, yeah, Burnley, they just cannot manage a game. They don't have it's experience and leadership. That's what this team is lacking. Maybe if you look at it very broadly, there's some very talented players there that are very inexperienced and haven't got any leadership. I know we've got Thiago Silva, but he's 39. He's not the answer. He's, you know, he's been exposed time and time again this season. You know, despite what a wonderful player he is, he's been exposed. We need a captain, a proper vocal captain. Because Connor's captain, not vocal. Chilwell, when he's captain, isn't vocal. Rhys James isn't vocal. There isn't a real kind of powerful vocal captain in that team. There's no leadership, no experience. And that's where we're falling down massively. Because, you know, you think some of these games... You know, a good experienced team would have gone on to score a third against Burnley, maybe a fourth, put the game to bed. That's it. As soon as they score a goal, it's squeaky bum time for this team. They cannot, for whatever reason, get over the line.
Well, the worrying thing is that, you know, I mean, you know, I had a feeling that we might be on in a position where we could have a bit of consistency, but I'm that's gone. I've been talking about us maybe scraping into seventh. I was saying, didn't I, last week? I said, look, I mean, in fact, actually, ironically, we still are. I mean, we've got two games in hand on West Ham, and we're only 4 points behind them. They're in seventh. Alternatively, both Fulham and Bournemouth, who are in 12th and 13th respectively, are 1 and 2 points behind us. We've got two games in hand on Fulham, one on Bournemouth. I mean, you know, this carries on. We're going to finish where we are now or arguably 12th or 13th. It's really, really fucked me off because I really did believe I thought we'd go on an upswing, but it doesn't appear like that, Dan.
Yeah, our two games in hand are Spurs and Arsenal. Not exactly easy games at the moment, but having said that, we have done better against team, you know, like City haven't beaten us this season. Liverpool home was pretty good. Arsenal home pretty good. I mean, we said our next four games, including Burnley with United, Sheffield United and Everton, if we get 10 points, then that would be respect for the man. It's not beyond the realms of possibility we could still get 10 points because the United team are utterly shit. And we're due a win against them. Sheffield United, utterly shit. If we could shithouse three wins, then suddenly the whole season looks very different. I know you're looking for consistency. We're not losing games, but we're not
putting games to bed. We're having, you know, apart from Liverpool and Wolves, we've generally done okay the last few games. I know it's kind of all lost about the myriad of shit going on social media, attacking the players, attacking the, you know, Bowley and co. You know, season could look very different in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
If we somehow managed to.
Yeah. Well, I'm wearing the... Go on.
I was about to say this. If we end up coming seventh, it's an improvement on last season. If we somehow managed to beat Man City and win the FA Cup, then you think, well, FA Cup and seventh, it'll be an okay season. You know, it's a trophy and it's
if we win the FA Cup, if we win the FA Cup, it's an okay season, period. But if you just look at the league in isolation, it's pretty shit, to be honest. You know, it's not where we need to be. And I think, for me, this is the point. You know, if we believe everything that we hear and read and see, you know, it is imperative for a club who do not enjoy the potential to make as much money as clubs who have bigger stadiums, and that Clear Lake's finances are all kind of geared towards that, then missing out on Europe again is going to be a serious financial issue, as well as a footballing issue. I mean, we're all got the hump because, you know, we won't be in Europe. But I mean, actually, financially, it'll be really worrying. Right. This reminds me, actually, George Sims, who writes for The Eye, whatever it is, I can't remember. But anyway, it's a newspaper. Anyway, he said this, which I thought was interesting. It's a bit long, so bear with me. When assessing the new Chelsea, it can be easy to make excuses to simply consider the changes week on week and ignore the bigger picture. Yet while it's been said time and time again, it still bears reiterating. Bowley and Egbally bought a football club that, although it had an ageing squad, was 1 year on from winning the Champions League. They spent 1.19 billion on players to make Chelsea demonstrably, unavoidably worse. It is mismanagement of one of the biggest football clubs in the world on a scale which has rarely been seen. The grand plan to invest wildly and solely in youth was based on a pipe dream and financial model never previously seen in football, because anyone who understands the game knows it would be virtually impossible to pull off. Massive scale change is not an excuse for underperformance when you're the ones implementing that change. Pochettino has been set up to fail, and the careers of some incredibly promising footballers are potentially being ruined due to the ignorance and arrogance of some greedy billionaires. Strong stuff, JK.
But absolutely correct, Chidge. I agree with every word of it. It's so easy to be kind of sentimental about all of this and say, yes, but, you know, they did well coming in and, you know, after Abramovich and the awfulness of the Ukraine situation. And yes, you've got to give them time. And yes, all right, they were misguided, but to me, that
they brought this on themselves. They didn't have to go and spend £1 billion on these players.
That is the real
fucking emperor's clothes.
That is the right angle to come from. It is indeed. It's one of the biggest football clubs in the world. I keep going on about that. We are an elite football club, and it's mismanagement on a scale which has rarely been seen. It's absolutely correct for one of the most famous, biggest clubs in the world to be in this position is execrable and pernicious. Absolutely appalling.
It is. Just very quickly, Dan, Trevor PB says they bought established stars when they rescued the Dodgers, so why different for Chelsea? Good point. Dan?
Yeah, I was just going to say similar that, you know, £1 billion, you could have better off spending, you know, £1 billion on seven or eight superstars rather than, you know, potentials, you know, same money. Yes, okay, they resell. But then you think if you bought a superstar, shirt sales, all the other crap that goes along now with modern football, surely that brings in more money. It's just a really bizarre, clueless way of doing stuff. I mean, on the non-footballing side, I know there was no foundations in place. They've had to rebuild that because obviously Abramovich was very much, here's £1 million a week, don't care about anything else. They've had to rebuild the club on the non-footballing side, and I get that. I don't agree with all they're doing in terms of these stupid gimmicks, but they're going to have to build the revenue because we haven't got an oligarch now
to throw money at stuff. So they're going to have to build the business side. But the footballing side, because Boney was sporting director, wasn't he, for the first year? And he just went out and paid 60 million for Cucurella. I mean, Jesus Christ, the fucking headless poodle. I mean, just baffling. He thought, oh, he looks good, we'll buy him. He looks good, we'll buy him. He's 17, he looks good, we'll buy him. I mean...
But they somehow don't. They use Brighton as a kind of template for excellence that hadn't been proven, had it? And the fact that they're not playing as well, and yet we're still being linked with players, and it's still being even suggested, whether that's rubbish, that Zerbi will end up being the manager. We're apparently linked with him is kind of proof of the way that people's minds are working. Is that the case? Are they really looking at Brighton as an example? They've just got this the bloke they've just nicked from them as the as one of the more stats gurus was. You know what did he? What has he achieved?
Paul Jewell's son. Yeah.
They're you know they're about 11th and 10th. Is that the norm? Is that? I mean, they're so misguided. They have made so many errors.
Yeah. I mean, the Brighton model was good for a club like Brighton. All due respect.
Yeah.
You know, a regional club, smallish fan base, great model. They've now turned £120 million profit without the Caicedo money. So some of this club now are, you know, it's still respectfully still Brighton. They're not going to be able to get the world stars because it's Brighton. But that model for a team like Brighton is brilliant. Completely self-sufficient. Haven't got to put any money in. Really, really good. You know, I don't know why. Why Brighton? I mean, you look at, if you're a big club, you look at Man City.
Or Liverpool,
yeah. I mean, Liverpool's probably a better example because arguably Liverpool probably more legitimate and haven't got 125 charges.
And they've got American owners. They've got with a very similar track record to this lot.
Glazer United, utterly shit. I mean, United have had 12, 30 years of dog shit under Glazer. It's only now with Ineos coming in, they might maybe all turn the corner. Mm. But they've literally got a bullet in a China shop, completely replaced everything without a second thought. You know, Marina, Bruce... Maybe they wanted to go, we don't know. Petacek, all these players who could have given them some sound advice, gone. You know, literally in a heartbeat. Then they've got, now we're like juggling loads of plates and they're all breaking. Breaking around us.
If they want to, you know, if they want to make us like Brighton, then that's okay. If they charge what Brighton do for season tickets, which for the equivalent ticket that I pay, and most of us would pay, is £595 a year, I think. That's the next season's season ticket price of Brighton for most parts of the ground is £595. If you want to make us to New Brighton, Todd and Begdad and Chris Jurasek, then why don't you just reduce my season ticket price to £595 because I'm watching the same level of shit that I would do if I was in the Amex Stadium. So there we go. It's over to you, boys. I think that's about it on the football, really. So actually, I'm going to say this. Fuck the football. It's about the people. It really, really is. I'm going to talk about my Saturday or our Saturday. This is what it's about. Look at that lovely picture of these fine specimens of human beings there. Tony Glover, Dan himself, me and Dan Burgess in the cock with a beer or two, with big smiles on our faces. It was clearly before the game, obviously. But for me, Dan, that epitomizes it, doesn't it? It's what it's all about. Still. You're on mute, mate. All on mute.
Yeah, lots of people like Tracy, Mars, Phil Spector and his mum and dad. Just a really lovely football. You know, that's what football's all about now. You know, we used to go and the football's a bonus. Now football's a pain in the arse. Like, do we want to stay in the pub or do we want to go to the football? So it's really good, you know. And also, don't forget, Dan's lovely mate, Texas John, who is really nice.
Get to talk to Texas John.
Yeah, really nice guy. I think he's on his fifth marriage, I think they were saying.
Is he really? Good blimey.
Yeah. He was very, very nice. But it was just a really good day. The weather was lovely. The weather was glorious. And as you say, it's a Saturday ruined by 90 minutes of football.
It was a great day. I mean, I had a crack. I mean, obviously, I took my nephew, so that's always quite fun when I take. And he got to sit with me. And he sat next to me in Gate 17, which was lovely. But I had the over the line mental health hub thing at the ground. I bumped into Kerry Dixon, had a nice chat with him. The food bank with Dom and Tim and Cliff was going strong, and Jason and Marco and DJ at the stall. Bumped into John Fleming, Flemo, in the cock, Loza. Dan was there, obviously, in Tony, as you know. Phil and Phil Spector was there, and his lovely, lovely lady. I bumped into his parents, Mark and Carol, on the way, and they had their Connor mug, so that was great. And two lovely lads came along. One was Scott, who came in especially to say hello to me, which was lovely. Thank you, Scott. And Patrick, or True Panks, who's often in Mixlr, who I didn't realise was in Mexico. He listens in from there. But he was over for a game. Had a lovely chat with Patrick. He was talking to Tony as well. Interrupt, please, Dan.
Yeah, he's looking for a ticket for the Man United game, Mr. Panks.
All right.
He's got a spare for United. Hit us up.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. If there's a spare going, True Panks wants one. Well, well noted. Oh, Nathan, of course, and Mari, Tracy, Tracy's mum. I always want to sing whenever I go, Tracy's mum has got it going on. Remember that song? Stacey's mum. No? No? There'll be people out there who will know. They're not all old like you two. Anyway, Benny boy, Ken. Ken was the, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, Ken was there. I haven't seen Potty Mouth for quite a while. Bumped into Neil Beard and his family. John Gordon, of course, who was the beneficiary of the ticket. And the best thing of all, after the match, I saw Waltz, Walter Otten. I haven't seen Waltz for a long, 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 long time. It was lovely to see Waltz. Tall Paul, Dean, who lives down my manor, Tape Mix Tim, Becca, Debs, Julie. Bushers was in the Atlas as well, wasn't he, Dan?
Yeah, Ramsey. Yeah.
Ramsey, exactly. And then we had the SGM, which was, I thought, was brilliantly done. Here we go. I got a pick of the SGM. This was great. And I walked into the SGM. Who should I see immediately but Mr. Jonathan Kidd? So I had the delight of sitting next to Jonathan as we watched the SGM going down. It was a good meeting. I felt there's actually Dan's in shot there. Dan, you see yourself there, mate? Mickey microphone. You're on mute.
I can see my bald head shining off the lights. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. I mean, Mark
and Dom were great, actually, aren't they?
Mark really. And Dom were great, weren't they, JK?
Absolutely fantastic. Fantastic fronting it. Really, really take my hat off to them. Superb.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they dealt with it all really well, and they explained the reasons behind the statement beautifully and were as befuddled by the FAB response as we all were, which seemed a bit unwarranted. I mean, Mark couldn't go into too many details on that. But yeah, I thought they handled the meeting very, very well. Some really good questions from people as well, actually, I thought, which was lovely. And we got a name check for some reason from the lovely Mark Willett, didn't we, JK?
We did. I was taken aback, actually. I thought, thank you very much. Thank you. I had no idea. And then we discovered it was Mark, and it was we then gave our thanks. But I'm not quite sure what I did. So,
I think Mark loves your fan bites. Mark comes along to the Troubadour gigs quite a lot,
yeah,
as well. But I think he kind of likes your fan bites. He thinks that you don't hold back and you tell it like it is. So that's why. Because you did say, why did I get a mention? And I very rudely said it's because you're with me. But
yeah, that's right. You did actually. Yes, you did.
I was only joking.
I'm used to that. I'm used to that. I went. There's something else, but I'll just go along with what Ginger said and go. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what he said. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think it's because of your fan bite. And you tell it like it is, you know.
I hadn't mentioned, I think the conversation at the time was about the FAB and the trust. So I was a bit confused because I deliberately haven't mentioned that. I think we talked about the fact that on the podcast on Monday that on Friday, I should say, we felt that it was divisive, didn't we? We felt that there was a divisive reaction by the club with the FAB. So perhaps there was an element of that because I was trying to be as tactful and not as aggressive in my analysis of that. But I really felt that there'd been a lot of manipulation of the truth in that instance. I felt that it was just setting one group of fans against the other and let them get on with it, you know, which I felt was desperately unfair. Very poor indeed.
Well, lovely to see Mark there and Cliff and Dom and Mark Meehan and Daryl was there. Richard Shallow was there. Dermot, the lovely Dermot Peaton. It was lovely. I mean, the funny thing is, boys, and maybe this is just me, probably, but, you know, the worse it gets on the pitch, we've been down this alley before, haven't we, a few times, but the worse it gets on the pitch, the better it is off it. I mean, I really did generally have a great day apart from the 90 minutes of shit that they said. Well, it was. I mean, actually, they did. You know, they actually played quite well in patches. It was just the way that Burnley got back that really pissed me off. But I mean, I just think that we're truly blessed with some fantastic people who follow this club. And it was just a wonderful reminder on Saturday because I met so many people. It was lovely. Roll on Thursday is all I can say. And the other thing I'll say is that, you know, because of that and the lovely people I know who I get to see on a match day, and of course, a lot of the people in the Discord group, I shouldn't forget them. I mean, but that's basically why I will continue to fight for these people and to speak truth to the powers that be and call it as we see it. I feel a real kind of responsibility for that. And it was a timely reminder because if you were involved with the Supporters Trust over the last couple of weeks, it's been tough for various reasons. But Saturday and seeing all these people there and how lovely so many of them are, it just reminded me why we fight, why we fight for these people, why we speak truth to power, why we call it as we see it. And I will, for one, continue to do that. Ain't that the truth, Dan?
100%. I know we don't please all the people, but the people we represent, we do our very best. We work hard. We do it all for free. We give up our time. We've only got the best interest of the supporters at heart. We haven't got any agendas. We don't get special treatment. What my people think, we don't go to Cobham, which people think we do. It's all fallacies. We work hard. We put our time in to supporters to get the best we can do for supporters. There's no agendas. It's just because we love the club.
You said that absolutely perfectly and back me up properly. And actually, it's a good time to remind the people here that there will be a new issue of the CFC UK fanzine out. It must be out for United because it wasn't out on Saturday. And of course, DJ informed me that I missed the cut. I've missed a deadline, Dan. I never miss deadlines. I always get it right in the 11th hour. But DJ told me, Chidge, you sent it too late, mate. And it was all about
you don't get in then. You don't get
no.
in.
No, I'm not in the next one. It was all about the injury crisis as well.
Wow.
I timed it beautifully. I wrote it before the whole injury thing with Lavia exploded because I'm very good like that. I'll have to put it on.
You failed the fanzine fitness test.
No, I did worse. I was late, mate. I turned up late to training. Fine 2 weeks' wages, mate. Anyway, don't worry about Chidge not being in it. You should go and buy it. It'll be brilliant. It's only £1. Of course, you get it from the store on a match day or from any of the sellers going around Fulham Road going, hurry up, it's only £1. But if you can't get to the match, don't worry. You can actually get a year's subscription, £20 in the UK, £45 in Europe and £60 in the rest of the world. Or £6 if you want a PDF version emailed to you, and you can pay via PayPal, and you can go to fanzine@cfcuk.net. All very easy to do. Now, the other thing that you could do, of course, is you could join the CPO. Now, at the SGM on when was it? Saturday. God, I don't even know who I am anymore. On Saturday, we had Chris Izzet from the CPO, who's the chairman of the CPO. Talking to everybody about what that was all about. I thought he was very, really good, Dan. Did you?
Yeah, he spoke really well. Very nice staff. Took on board all the suggestions. So, yeah, he's a good asset for the CPO. Really, really smart guy.
Yeah, JK was trying to persuade me to buy Sasha a share there and then, weren't you, JK?
I was.
Yeah.
I was trying to work out whether he would be interested or whether you could afford it at the time, actually.
Yeah. Well, I do you know what? I thought about getting him one, but I thought I'd get him something else. But I think, well, I'll ask him. If he wants one, I'll get him one. You know, it'd be a delight to get him one. He can't afford one. So
I put you under a bit of pressure there, Chidge. I'm sorry.
No, not actually, funnily enough. Yes, you did. But no, you didn't. Because funnily enough, I had actually been thinking of doing that. So it was actually, it served more as a reminder. In fact, that's actually what I wanted to do. Look, you lot, if you want to have a share of Chelsea, basically, that's what it means. If you've got a CPO share, then you will have a share in the freehold of the stadium. And of course, that means you have a lot of say when the discussions happen about whether they relocate, move, redevelop or whatever. So it's well worth having. We are the only supporters of a club anywhere that have this kind of vehicle, certainly in the UK. And as I said, you get a bit of power and you get a bit of a say, and that's what it's all about. So £110 for an electronic share, about £175 for a frame share signed by a Chelsea player. Just go to chelseafc.com and search for the Chelsea Pitch Owners. You know it makes sense. Right. Thanks for listening. See you on Friday. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, keep it chills.
Hit up your chills.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.